Welcome, everybody. Radio.
Big Grip Spray is the original big and squishy case for iPad. It's lightweight, durable, and non-toxic. Loved and trusted by schools and families across the country and around the world. Grab Big Grips today at BigGrips.com.
Welcome, everybody. This is Dr. Gil Tippy, and this is Respecting Autism. This is our premier show, and tonight we're really excited. We have some absolutely wonderful guests. We have Christopher and Jacqueline Gauthier, and I think you're really going to enjoy them. But since this is our inaugural show, I want to do a little bit of background on why we decided to call the show Respecting Autism and what it is we intend to do here, what we're hoping to accomplish here on Blog Talk Radio on the Coffee Klatch. And I want to give you an idea of where I'm coming from in terms of philosophy and what it is that we do in our interventions in the autism world. So I wrote a book with Dr. Stanley I. Greenspan. Dr. Greenspan is the creator of the DIR model, and we called it Respecting Autism. The subtitle of it is the Rebecca School Case Book for Parents and Professionals, and it was a labor of love with Dr. Greenspan, and Dr. Greenspan passed away right at the end of the writing of the book. He never actually got to see it published. So we called it Respecting Autism because we really believe that that's what the DIR model and behavioral interventions that focus on development and that focus on respect is all about. So I just want to tell you briefly what I think our general idea is here. Over the next several weeks, we're going to be talking about interventions that actually tell parents that they are competent, interventions that tell parents that they are the very best people to be working with their kids. We want to make people understand that being with children is what is the most beneficial thing. We want people to understand that we can't do things without their help and their support, that we aren't just interventionists who fly in and show up at houses and take over the treatment of kids. And we want people to understand that they are powerful and competent. That includes the people that we intend to support with our intervention. It's important for us that we tell people that you can do it, that you're competent, and that you're the experts in your own children. So, if you believe in a developmental perspective, then you are listening to the right show. And if you think that relationship is primary, then you're listening to the right show. And if you support the notion that people have differences in their sensory systems, which affect how they understand the world, and which affect how they are able to move through the world and put together a motor plan, then you're in. If you want to punish people, then this is probably not going to be the radio show that you're going to want to listen to. If you want to give people a reward in order to get them to do something that you've dreamed up that they should be doing, and you want to use that reward to get them to do that thing, and the reward isn't the human relationship that you're holding out for them, then you are probably listening to the wrong radio show. If you want to withhold things from people that they love, then you're probably listening to the wrong radio show. But if you want to help people, support them, to reach their highest aspirations, then I think probably you have come to the absolute right place. So over the next, I hope, many weeks with you, I want to talk about how it is that we can use relationship and the simple principles of child development and the notion that we can help you to integrate your sensory systems, how we can use those things to help support communities cross country of older persons, how we can help businesses to support people who identify themselves on the autism spectrum in work situations, how we can help the society in general to support the beautiful neurodiversity that this group of people who we're talking about represent. And we want to welcome people into our society fully so that we are not excluding the wonderful depth and beauty that they're bringing to us all. So that's what this show is going to be about. And to that end, I've been lucky enough for the last few years to be able to travel around a little bit and travel around the country and meet lots and lots of cool people who I want to invite as guests onto the show and have them explain to you how they're doing this all across the country and in different places. And I have brought in, fortunately for me, Christopher Gauthier and Jacqueline Gauthier, who are on the line, I think, right now. Chris and Jackie, are you there?
Yep, we're here.
How you doing,
Hi,
Jill?
Jackie, how are you? Hi, Chris, how are you? I want to give you guys a little bit of an introduction. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about Jackie. Jackie is a fierce advocate. Is that fair for me to say? Those of you who have ever met her know that. She's a fierce advocate for persons on the spectrum and for appropriate education and for appropriate developmental work with people. And I didn't know till I was reading your biography today, Jackie, that you really have a long history of advocacy and working for people and with people who've suffered some really tough circumstances. So it's really impressive. I feel like in some ways I'm not worthy in your presence here. But,
please.
no, it's very true. That's why you're here today. And and now let me just talk a little bit about Chris. Chris is an artist par excellence. I got a picture from Chris today that he took of me in New York, and I told him that this was the first time I'd ever actually looked at a picture of myself where I felt as if the inner me was actually present on the surface. And I know that that's what you're going for all the time with people, Christopher, and I know that you're facing autism project and your evidence and artifacts projects. I know that's what you're going for, but it was absolutely stunning for me to see that displayed to myself, and I realized, oh my gosh, there is something really special about the way that your art expresses itself. So at some point during this discussion, I want to get into how is it that you are able to do that, and how is it that some of the things that you have working for you and sometimes maybe working against you play into that. Chris is has displayed around the world. If you go to the website, if you go to the Blog Talk website, you're going to see a list of his accomplishments. There's really a beautiful layout showing him actually putting a museum collection up. And if you go to Chris's website, you're going to be able to see all of the photographs in all of his galleries, and that includes some of his real environmental advocacy. So I guess I'm going to ask both of you, and either of you can take this to start this whole thing off, how on earth did the two of you, A, find each other, and B, become such tremendously effective and fierce advocates in this community?
Jackie, you want to tell the beginning there?
No, I want you to tell the story of how we met, and then I'll talk about how we became advocates. How about that?
Okay. So my senior year of high school, actually our senior year of high school, I was the assistant, the TA for the photo class in the high school. So I went there early, set my stuff in the back corner, and you know, didn't like being in any place but the back corner. So I went over to talk to the teacher about the course direction and what we were going to do and all this stuff. And I came back out, and at my seat, all of my stuff had been moved. And there sitting in my seat, feet up on the table, is this little punker chick. And I walked up to her, and I said, "You're in my seat." And she goes, "No, I'm not." "Yes, you're in my seat." "No, I'm not. This is not your seat." This was the beginning of the great love affair.
It sounds like a match made in heaven.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and we come from very different worlds. You know, I come from a very pro-military family. Jackie was raised Mennonite, very pacifist. We would constantly butt heads, you know, in that perspective. But she really opened up my eyes to the possibilities of what social justice really is about. Being raised Catholic, I was aware to a certain level about some of that stuff, but not to the degree that the Mennonite exposure really, for me at least, brought to my worldview something that I feel pretty deeply about.
So, Chris, you said something that I think is a clue, and that is that you had to sit in the back of the class. And I'm not sure how you want to identify yourself, but it might be helpful for listeners to understand your predilection for sitting in the back.
Well, I'm an adult with Asperger's and didn't figure it out until recently. I never felt comfortable being in the middle of the room, and certainly not in the front of the room. I joke with my students that all the photographers hide out in the back of the room, but I think it's because we like hiding behind something else and just observing.
When we were together in New York and you had a camera in your hands, Chris was photographing some of the students at the Rebecca School, where I'm the clinical director, and he was photographing them, and he was explaining to some of the parents that were in the room, parents and children at the school were in the room, and he was explaining to some of the parents just how powerful and important a camera in his hands was. Chris, you want to talk a little bit about that?
You know, the camera for me really is a safe zone between the world and me. I mean, I've never really been known to be a portrait photographer, and suddenly I've sort of fallen into this backwards. And so for me to interact with other people, that's a safety filter in a lot of ways. And I recall a young man that we were photographing was curious, and so, you know, I handed him my camera. And I've noticed that often, at least with my students who do go into photography, that they have this very similar interaction with the world, where as soon as the camera goes up, they can talk, they can interact, they can be harmonizing with everybody else. But you take that thing away, and suddenly all the social pressure, all the social anxiety pops up. Like, the camera gives us license to be interactive and social.
Yeah, there was this really beautiful moment where you picked up, handed the camera to this student of ours, and you know, he was really feeling kind of stiff and didn't really know what to do, and actually has very little language. He's a very big guy. He's a big 6'4" guy, and you handed the camera to him, and he immediately knew what to do with it and put it up to his eye, and things really loosened up from there.
Absolutely. Well, you know, part of it was as soon as he and I walked in the room, because I followed him in the room with you guys, the first thing I saw him do was to walk over to a computer that was on the floor and to push the button. And I thought, that's curious. That's really interesting. Like, maybe there's something to this, because I know, at least for myself, that interaction with the shutter release, it's a very positive experience. So, you know, what's the risk? I've got this really sweet young man in front of me, let him look at the world.
It's really interesting. You know, you mentioned that you saw him push a button and that sort of tipped you off. And for me, that lets me know at least partially why you are so attracted to this relationship-based way of working with kids, with this developmental-based way, because part of what I see in the work all the time is that the work is not so complicated in terms of explaining it to people, but what it's complicated in is just being present. And so, you know, you're describing your experience of just being present with this kid and seeing, oh, a button's pushed. Maybe this is a way that this child would like to interact and have a piece of technology in between me and him. It's kind of cool that you were just able to be in the room and be like that.
Yeah. Well, that's also part of my teaching style, too, is the same thing. Students will say things or hint at things, and you just watch patterns. You know, you're looking for, when you teach art, you're looking for the depth and the breadth of the soul. And you want to bring out the best of who they are and encourage them.
I love that. The depth and the breadth of the soul is really, that's what we're pulling for all the time, right? Is one of the things Stanley Greenspan said was, we want these kids to be poets of their inner lives and not just be able to point at things on the outside. And it sounds like you're aiming at the same things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Jackie, so how did you end up, you've always been politically active, and you certainly have not, doesn't sound to me like you've ever backed down from too much, as described by Chris's trying to get you out of his seat in the back of the class. But, so how did you end up being so fiercely advocating for, in the autism community?
Well, you mentioned sort of the history of my biography, and one of the things that I was involved with earlier in my young life was advocating for the Violence Against Women Act. I was a sexual assault crisis intervention advocate, going to hospitals and police departments, doing trainings with state's attorney's offices and those kinds of things. And that's really where I picked up some of my skills. I had some mentors there that provided some, you know, fabulous modeling. So in terms of autism, when our children were born, Madeline first and then 14 months later, Caleb, we could see in Maddie from the very beginning that there was something going on with this child. She was just very difficult to regulate and couldn't settle. Just as an infant, she just couldn't settle, and she had many, many issues that probably because of my training in social work and the time that I had spent with young children, that I knew that was not typical. And I felt fairly confident in my own parenting skills, so I was trying to figure this out. I'm like, you know, I've always been able to settle a baby. What's up with this? So as it turns out, after discovering information about sensory integration and processing differences and issues, after a period of time, we realized that what we were working with here was kids on the autism spectrum. And unfortunately, a lot of our journey, as with so many parents, was very independent. I mean, we had to sort of figure things out for ourselves and do the research. And until we moved to Utah, we really didn't have any support services at all. And then we were able to get some early intervention, and that's where we were exposed for the first time to Stanley Greenspan. And that just changed everything. It was like a complete game changer for us because we were handed tools and I don't even know really the model. We were handed the model that helped us bring about significant change with our kids, and that was amazing. And so having that just made all the difference in the world. And, of course, all along the way we had to advocate for ourselves. So once you get to the place where things are a little bit more steady and you kind of have a sense of, you know, we can handle this, we've got this, then, of course, reaching out to others is the next step, because it just, you just feel like you have to. Like, why does the road have to be so hard? It was so hard for us. Maybe we can make it easier for somebody else by telling our story and by talking about it and telling people what we've learned. So that's sort of how we fell into advocacy.
Yeah, you're so eloquent. I didn't want to interrupt you. Just you were telling the story perfectly. I'm kind of interested in the school because it seems to me that this way of working with children is a universal way of working with children. It isn't just for children or adults on the spectrum. It isn't just for persons with neurodevelopmental disorders. This is really child development. This is how kids learn and grow and are. So can you want to talk a little bit about the school where, is principal the right word for you?
Director, I think, is my actual title.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, I am the director of Morningside Preschool and Kindergarten in Logan, Utah. And that's right. That's right on. I mean, part of why the DIR floor time model was so appealing to me is that I was and always will be, you know, deeply interested in child development and developmental appropriate developmental education. So for me, I have enjoyed very much implementing wonderful sensory experiences, wonderful hands-on creative activities, tinkering, you know, all kinds of stuff that we do at the school that maybe I knew about before I knew about DIR floor time, but maybe didn't know the best way to implement those things. And so for me, yes, I use floor time at my school every day, and I teach my teachers why. You know, why do we want that sparkle in their eye? Why do we want to stay in relationship and engaged in an authentic moment, being in the moment with those kids, that and why that is creating an environment where learning is taking place rapidly, much more rapidly than memorization or flashcards or any of that kind of stuff that people fall into thinking they're going to get results. Sure, they get quick results, but the long-term benefit of letting them splash and glue and glitter and paint and figure out how a toaster works by taking it apart, I mean, there's just... you can't quantify it in data in the same way. Maybe it's art, maybe it's child development with, you know, the art of child development. I'm not sure how you would describe that, but what we do at the school is DIR floor time, or at least floor time, and it's good for all kids, I think.
Yeah, it's just child development, and it's the gleam in the eye is really the key, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's funny, you reminded me of something that I heard fairly recently, is that the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which hires a lot of engineers and really high-powered folks, has now only begun screening very heavily to find people who have worked with their hands, whether they took apart toasters as a kid or whether they were gearheads and were working on cars. If people can't work with their hands, they have a great deal of difficulty, apparently, thinking novelly and trying to solve problems. And so you just sparked that memory in me, so I wanted to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're coming toward the end of this show, remarkably. You guys are so interesting that I've basically had to do nothing, which I find quite lovely. I'm interested in how it is. Maybe this is an appropriate question for Jackie, but I think also, Chris, you better weigh in on it. What's it like to have a household with three people identified on the spectrum? I guess I'm asking Jackie first. or maybe the two of you, how do you work this relationship thing out, and how do you continue to move forward and take into account everybody's individual differences and all of the relationship-based pieces of it? That's
so it's complicated. Yeah, it's complicated. And it's something that we work on every day. We're all four of us are extremely passionate people, and those folks are on the spectrum, but I'm kind of close behind. I'm sure I'm not diagnosable, but I have a lot of a social anxiety, and recently did a television interview in which I could not stare at the camera. My eye contact was just the worst I've ever seen. So all that to say, we're not all that different from each other. I guess what I would say is the most important, or the piece of knowledge that maybe made the biggest difference for us, was when we started to understand the language of Asperger's. I'll call it Asperger's because I think pretty much the family's in that category. We suddenly had a framework in which to hang our experiences, so we understood ourselves so much better. So the conflicts that we had, we could put in the framework of, well, I'm having sensory issues right now, which is why I'm shutting down, or I'm freaking out, and only one person can freak out at a time, so it's my turn. You can freak out next when I'm done freaking out. So we have learned some things about that, but I would not say that our life maybe is peaceful. I would say that it's meaningful, and it's passionate, and we're always working for balance. So that's my two cents. Chris, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I mean, you summed it all up, and I think the kind of intensity and passion that we live with can be really overwhelming to somebody who's on the outside. It can be overwhelming for us on the inside, but it also has a tremendous amount of grace. You know, that we could be going, Maddie and I, or Caleb and I could be going at it, you know, head-to-head, toe-to-toe, and then suddenly one of us cracks a joke at the other one about how ridiculous this argument is. And we have developed our own language to the point where we just kind of laugh and go, yeah, you're right, that's kind of dumb, you know. And my kids are 6 and 7, and we're already starting to articulate that kind of dynamism.
It sounds to me like it's a really cool house to be growing up in, and I've met your kids, and your kids are really lucky. It's really a wonderful thing.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to invest in therapy bills, though.
Well, whether you get therapy or not, you're going to have these intense, talented, neurodiverse kids who are going to bring such cool new ways of seeing to all of us. So when I'm long in a wheelchair and in the home, they're going to be running the world, and I'm really glad that they're out there doing that. Chris, we got a couple more minutes. I would be really not doing you a fair deal if I don't get you to talk a little bit about your Facing Autism project or any other of your beautiful photographic projects.
Yeah. You know, everything that I do is about trying to help everyone as much as possible in ways that I can. I come from a background of working in advertising and being very skilled at this, and knowing that what I can do can either make corporations millions of dollars, or I can help people who are suffering and help change the way the world looks at a particular situation. So instead of letting populations be invisible, I want to make them extremely visible, extremely passionate, extremely relational, so that a viewer can't escape the reality and the intimacy that's involved, the humanity that's involved. So for me, with Facing Autism, the goal of hundreds, if not thousands, of portraits is crucial to someone walking in and being overwhelmed by all of these images, looking at them at one time. And partly there's an irony for me that you know, many of the people who I photograph, who are looking at me while I'm photographing, who conversely the viewers, will in all reality, in real life, never look them in the eye. But they get to be stared at by these wonderful people.
Oh, that's very cool. That's very, very cool. You said at one point when I was talking to you that you really wanted to do for this group of folks the same thing that Walker Evans did in his Dust Bowl photos.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the migrant mother from Dorothea Lange is one of the iconic images from, you know, the Great Depression. I am not good enough to make one image that does that, but if I can make a collection of thousands of portraits that even come close to that, then I have met my ultimate goal.
Well, I, as someone who is only an amateur artist and certainly doesn't have your gift, I can tell you they're powerful, and every time I encounter them, and it doesn't matter who the photograph is, it's a powerful thing. So we're going to have to see if we can get an exhibition here on the East Coast so people can take a look at these full-size portraits, and we'll work on that. Yeah, it'll be fun. We'll have some fun. Well, this has been wonderful, and what a joy to have you guys volunteer to be part of this glitchy first-time respecting autism show, but I really appreciate it, and I'd love to have you back and talk some more, and look forward to any other collaborative things that we can do.
So cool. Thanks so much.
It's been our honor. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, guys. Well, thank you, everybody. We're going to sign off here. This has been Respecting Autism. It's Dr. Gil Tippi and my guests, Chris and Jackie Gauthier. And I look forward to welcoming you all again, and hope to see you again at the next show. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.